killing everyone on board.
"Children," I said. "You'd like a little boy. I'd like a little girl."
I may not have known much about pregnancies, but I knew that you couldn't have a son or a daughter without actually doing it first. The priests at school had once muttered something to the effect that when a mummy and a daddy loved each other very much, they lay close together and the Holy Spirit descended upon them to create the miracle of new life. Charles, in his one attempt at a man-to-man talk with me, had put it rather differently.
"Get her kit off," he said. "Play with her tits a bit, because the ladies love that. Then just stick your cock in her pussy and ram it in and out a bit. Don't hang around too long in there. It's not a bloody train station. Just do your business and get on with your day."
It's no wonder he managed to secure so many wives, the old romantic. I try to imagine what it would be like to undress Alice, for her to undress me, for us to be lying in a bed together naked, for her to look down at my penis and stroke it or suck it and then guide it inside her.
"What's wrong?" asked Alice.
"Nothing. Why?
You've gone a funny colour. You looked like you're about to be sick."
"Do I?"
"Seriously, Cyril, you're practically green."
"I am a little light-headed, now you mention it," I said, reaching for my pint.
"Then you probably shouldn't drink that. Would you like some water?"
"Yes, I'll get some."
"No," she practically shouted, standing up and pushing me back into my seat.
"No, I'll get it."
She made her way over to the bar, and I followed her with my eyes, wondering why she was so keen. And then I saw that the young man was still there, and as she took her place at the bar next to him, she began throwing him oblique glances. The barman was busy, and they stood patiently, side by side, for a few moments until he leaned over and said something to her as she gave a quick reply. Whatever she had said, he burst out laughing, and I knew that this wasn't just flirting on his part. Alice had a quick wit. It was one of the things I loved about her the most. And yes, I did love her. In my way, in my own selfish and cowardly way. I watched as they talked, and then the barman approached, took their orders, and they talked about something else. He must have asked her whether she was there alone, because she shook her head and nodded in my direction, and when he saw me sitting there, waiting for her to return, he looked disappointed. When he turned back to Alice, I was able to focus on his face, for they were staring so intently at each other that they were utterly oblivious to me. The young man was not only extremely good-looking, but there was warmth in his expression, too. I knew nothing of him, but I believed that he would treat the girl he loved with gentleness and affection. A moment later, she came back with my glass of water, sat down, and I pretended that I hadn't observed anything of their exchange. "There was something I wanted to talk to you about," she said suddenly, looking a little irritated now, a flush of colour in her cheeks. "And I'm just going to spit it out, since it doesn't feel as if you're going to take the lead, no matter how much I hint. The reason I mentioned that Max and Samantha are going to London next weekend is because the house will therefore be empty. I think you should come over, Cyril. Come for dinner. We'll drink a couple of Max's best wines and, you know, go to bed together." I said nothing, but felt as if a great weight was being wrapped around my entire body, such as the good burghers of Amsterdam were wont to do during the 17th century when they tied millstones around the necks of convicted homosexuals before throwing them into the canals and leaving them to drown. "Right," I said. "I see. Interesting idea."
"Look, I know how religious you are," she said, "but we're going to be married soon, after all." Of course, I wasn't religious at all. I cared nothing for it, and aside from occasionally thinking that Jesus with long hair and a beard was rather hot, I never gave any thought to an afterlife or the matter of mankind's creation. This was a deception, yet another, that I had propagated since Alice and I had first started dating, and I had used it from our first date as an excuse to stop me from having to go to bed with her. The downside of this arrangement was that in order to appear consistent, I had to go to Mass every Sunday morning. Fearing that she might pull a Mary Margaret and follow me unawares, unlikely, given their very different dispositions, but nevertheless a possibility, I regularly attended 11:30 Mass at Westland Row, the same church where 14 years earlier I had killed a priest by confessing my perversions to him. I never sat on that side of the church, of course. I had done so once, seen the broken tile that hadn't been mended since his fall, and it still gave me the creeps. Instead, I took my place near the back and generally had a little snooze until some old woman gave me a punch in the arm to wake me up, staring at me as if I alone was responsible for the downfall of Western civilization. "I don't know," I said after a lengthy pause. "I want to, I really do. But you know what the Pope says?"
"I don't care what the Pope says," snapped Alice.
"I have no interest in fucking the Pope."
"Jesus, Alice,"
I said, giggling a little at her choice of words. I might not have been religious, but that sounded a little iniquitous, even to me.
"No, not him either.
Look, Cyril, let's call a spade a spade. We're getting married soon, and all going well, we'll have a very happy, very successful marriage over the next 50 years or so. That's what I want anyway. Isn't it what you want?"
"Yes, of course it is," I said.
"Because," she added, lowering her voice a little, "if you have any doubts at all, there's still time for you to say so."
"But I don't have any doubts, Alice," I said.
"The last thing I need is to get another phone call when I'm already in my dress. You understand that, Cyril, don't you? I don't know how I survived what Fergus did to me. I'm telling you right now that I couldn't go through that twice. It would be the end of me." I stared at her, uncertain where all this had come from. Had she been thinking this for some time? Did she suspect something? By the bar, I saw the handsome young man finishing his pint and reaching for his jacket.
"Now is your chance," I told myself. "Tell her the truth. Trust her to understand, to forgive your deceit, to be your friend, to help you and love you still. And then tell her that we can discuss it some other time, but right now she needs to go over to the bar and give that man her phone number before it's too late."
"Cyril," said Alice, sounding suddenly concerned. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing," I said.
"Why?"
"You're crying."
"I'm not crying," I said. But when I reached a hand to my cheeks, to my astonishment, they were wet and the tears were rolling from my eyes. I hadn't even noticed. I wiped them away with my handkerchief and tried to pull myself together. "Alice," I said, looking at her more intently than I had ever looked at anyone in my life as I reached forward to take her hand.
"Why were you crying?"
"I wasn't."
"You were."
"I don't know. I must have a cold."
"Alice?"
"What?"
she asked nervously.
"Tell me, Cyril. Whatever it is, just tell me. I promise that it will be all right."
"Will it, though?"
I said, looking directly at her.
"You're frightening me now."
"I'm sorry, Alice. This is all my fault."
"What's your fault?"
"Cyril, what have you done?"
"It's what I haven't done. What I haven't said."
"Why, what haven't you said?"
"Cyril, you can tell me anything, I promise. You look so unhappy right now. Nothing can be that bad, surely."
I looked down at the table and she remained silent, waiting for me to speak.
"If I tell you," I said eventually, "then you'll hate me. And I don't want you to hate me."
"But I could never hate you. I love you."
"I've made a terrible mistake," I said.
She sat up, her face growing darker now.
"Is there someone else?" she asked.
"Have you been seeing someone else?"
"No," I said, even though I had, just not in public.
"It's not that."
"Then what?"
"Jesus, Cyril, just tell me."
"All right," I said. "The thing is, ever since I was a boy..."
"Yes?"
"Ever since I was a boy, I've known that..."
"Excuse me." We both looked up, and standing over us was the handsome young man from the bar. I thought he'd left, but no, he was simply standing there with a wide smile on his face, looking slightly embarrassed.
"I'm sorry to interrupt," he said.
"What?"
asked Alice, looking up at him irritably.
"What is it?"
"It's just... look, I wouldn't normally do this type of thing," he said. Only I thought there was a bit of a connection between us back there. I wondered whether you might give me your phone number, that's all, if you didn't mind. Maybe I could take you out some night.
She stared at him in disbelief. Are you joking me? She asked.
No, he said, frowning. Sorry, did I get the wrong idea? Only it seemed as if...
I'm sitting here with my fiancé, she said, turning to me. Can't you see that?
Do you normally ask girls out when they're sitting with their fiancés? Are you that sure of yourself?
Oh, he said,
turning and looking at me in shock. I'm terribly sorry, I didn't think... Actually, I assumed you were brother and sister.
Why on earth would you assume that? Asked Alice.
I don't know, he said, completely flustered now. Something about the way you were both sitting, the way you were looking at each other. I didn't think you were together.
Well, we are. And that's an incredibly rude thing to say.
Yes, he said. I'm sorry. I apologize to you both. And with that, he turned around and made his way out of the bar as Alice watched after him, shaking her head.
Go after him. I should have said, go after him before he disappears forever. Can you believe that? She asked, turning back to me. It was a mistake, I said. He didn't mean anything by it. I'm surprised you didn't punch him. I stared at her.
Did you want me to? I'm not really the punching type.
No, of course not. Only... Oh, I don't know what I'm saying. This evening is going all wrong. Let's forget that ever happened and just tell me whatever you were going to tell me.
I can't even remember now, I lied, wishing I could just leave.
Of course you can. You said that ever since you were a little boy, ever since I was a little boy, I wasn't sure that I could ever make someone happy, I said quickly, dismissing the entire thing. That's all.
It sounds stupid, all right?
Can we just leave it at that? But you make me happy all the time, she said. Do I? I wouldn't be marrying you if you didn't.
Right, I said.
But look, while we're being honest with each other, there's something I want to tell you too. And I'm just going to spit it out, okay?
Okay, I said, feeling utterly miserable.
The thing is, I think we should have sex with each other before we get married, just to be sure.
Be sure about what?
Can I ask you something? She said. You can ask me anything.
Will you tell me the truth?
I wondered whether she noticed my hesitation. Of course, I said. Have you ever been with a woman, Cyril?
I knew that I could be honest with her about this at least.
No, I said, looking down at the table and rubbing my finger against some invisible mark imprinted into the wood. No, I haven't.
I thought not, she said.
And there was something approaching relief in her tone.
I felt certain that you were a virgin.
It's the church, you see. They've messed all you boys up.
Not Julian, of course. Julian is different. Although I suppose he's got his own problems with his constant need for affirmation.
They've made you think that sex is something dirty when it's not. It's perfectly natural. It's part of life.
It's how we all got here in the first place.
And it can be wonderful if it's done right. Even when it's done wrong, it's still better than a poke in the eye with a rusty nail. Oh, I'm not suggesting that everyone should be going out and doing it left, right, and centre like Julian does, but if you really like someone...
I suppose what you're saying is that you've had sex, I said.
I have, yes, she said.
And I'm not ashamed to admit it. That's not going to be a problem, is it? You're not going to get all judgmental on me, are you?
No, of course not, I said.
It makes no difference to me how carelessly some people want to cast themselves into the fires of hell for all eternity.
What?
I'm kidding.
You better be.
But have there been many? I asked, intrigued.
Does it matter?
I suppose not, but I'd like to know anyway.
Well, let's put it this way, she said. More than the Queen, less than Elizabeth Taylor.
How many? I insisted. Do you really want to know, or are you just being a pervert?
A little of both, I said.
Three, if it matters that much to you, she said. My first was with a friend of Julian's when I was 18.
My second, a friend of Julian's, I said, interrupting her. Who?
Well, maybe I shouldn't say. I suppose he might be a friend of yours, too.
Who? I repeated. I actually don't remember his surname, she said. I met him by chance, on a night out with Julian, just after I got my leaving cert results. It was at a party in someone's house. His name was Jasper. He played the piano accordion. Of course, no one should play the piano accordion in public. They should be made to do it on some desert island somewhere. But as it turned out, he played it rather well. I remember thinking he had very sexy fingers. Not Jasper Timpson, I said, sitting forward in shock. That's the one, she said, clapping her hands in delight. Well done, you. Oh, I suppose that means you do know him, then. Of course I know him, I said. We went to school together. Are you actually telling me that you lost your virginity to Jasper Timpson? Well, yes, she said with a shrug. You have to lose it to someone, don't you? And he was sweet, and good-looking, and he was there, which somehow was enough for me at the time. Look, Cyril, you said you didn't mind. I don't mind. You know he lives in Toronto now with his... I paused and made inverted comma symbols in the air with my fingers. His boyfriend? Yes, Julian told me, said Alice, laughing as she sat back with a slight giggle. He tried to kiss him too once, you know. It was all I could do not to burst out laughing. Did he? Doesn't surprise me. It would only have surprised me if he hadn't tried to kiss him. Anyway, I knew he was a homosexual even then. He confided in me that he thought he was, but he wasn't absolutely certain. Anyway, we were both young. We liked each other. I wanted to lose mine before another day passed, so I suggested we give it a go. And what did he say? I asked, stunned by all of this. Oh, he jumped at the offer. And so we both leaped into bed. And it was fine. We both got what we wanted out of it. I got to pop my cherry, and he got to realize that he was definitely not interested in doing that ever again. At least not with a girl. We shook hands afterwards and went our separate ways. Well, metaphorically speaking, we didn't literally shake hands. I mean, I suppose we might have done, but I can't imagine it. We probably kissed each other on the cheek, which I think he preferred to where he had been kissing me. Anyway, she continued, sounding as if she wanted to bring this conversation to a rapid end. After Jasper, there was a boy who I dated for a few months, an aspiring actor who was most definitely not a homosexual, unless he was torturing himself by trying to have sex with every girl in Dublin. And then, finally, Fergus, of course. Of course, I said. Good old Fergus. We only got onto this topic, she continued, because I said that I wanted to sleep together when Max and Samantha go to London. Christ, you're just mad for it, aren't you? I said. Oh, shut up, Cyril, she said, slapping my hand with her own. You're only pretending to be annoyed. So, what do you say? What room do you sleep in? What? In Dartmouth Square. Don't forget I grew up there. Oh, yes, of course. Well, my room is on the second floor. Julian told me you had my old room. On the top floor. I moved down a flight. All those stairs. Well, I'm not doing it there, I said quickly. That was Maud's bedroom. There's just... I couldn't. I really couldn't. Fine. We can go up to the top floor if you prefer. Into your old bedroom. How does that sound? I thought about it and nodded reluctantly. All right, I said. Yes, well, I suppose so. If it's that important to you. It should be important to both of us. It is, I said, sitting up straight now and thinking, fuck it. If Jasper Timpson, who was even more of a homosexual than I was, considering he had an actual boyfriend, could do it, then so could I. I'm in. I mean, I will be in. No, that's all wrong. I don't mean I'll... Relax, Cyril. It's fine. Shall we say Saturday? Around 7 o'clock? Saturday, I agreed. Around 7 o'clock. And have a bath before you come over. Of course I'll have a bath, I snapped. What do you take me for? Sometimes boys don't. You have a bath, I said. Remember, I know where you've been. She smiled. I knew you'd be willing when you saw how important it was to me. That's one of the things I love about you, Cyril. You're not like other boys. You're sensitive to my feelings. Yes, well, I said, knowing that the days ahead would be long ones for me. I kept my hands off myself for the rest of the week,
and didn't go anywhere near the side streets or parks that were my regular nighttime haunts, wanting to be as randy as possible, come the big moment. I tried to put it out of my head that no matter what happened then, even if it all went well, there was still that 50 years that Alice had mentioned ahead of us to think about too. In my foolishness, I decided that was a bridge I'd cross when I got to it. And, as things turned out, Saturday night went better than I could ever have predicted. I felt a genuine warmth towards her anyway, an affection bordering on the romantic, if not quite the sexual. And then there had been many times when I had enjoyed the prolonged kissing sessions in which we engaged. I insisted on the light staying off, of course, for I wanted to get to know her body first by touch before being confronted with the reality of it, and although it was not what I wanted, it was soft to the touch, not muscled and hard as I liked, and smoother than I had ever imagined skin could be. I somehow found myself lost in the novelty of it, and performed in a way that I think could best have been described as perfectly adequate. "Well, that's a start at least," said Alice when it was over. She hadn't reached any sort of climax, of course, although I had, which seemed rather ironic to me, all things considered. A sign. When I woke, the sun was being a total bollocks, pouring through the window and scorching through my eyelids. I hadn't even bothered to draw the curtains on my return a few hours earlier, collapsing face down and fully clothed on the sofa, where the combination of a hangover with an awareness of my predicament now made me feel as if my last moments were upon me. I closed my eyes, desperate to return to sleep, but was quickly hauling my sorry carcass towards the bathroom, unsure whether I needed to piss or vomit. In the end, I settled for both, concurrently, before making my way nervously to the mirror. Dracula would have felt less fear examining his own reflection. Of course, I looked terrible, like the victim of some random act of overnight violence, mugged and left for dead before being inexplicably brought back to life by a malevolent physician. I hoped that a long shower might help me to recover, but an immediate and permanent end to world hunger would have been more likely. It was 11:15 by now, and I was due at the church by 12. I imagined Alice in Dartmouth Square, putting her dress on, surrounded by bridesmaids, while they each tried not to make inappropriate references to what had happened the last time they'd gathered for such an event. Suddenly, the realization of how to solve all my problems hit me. It would involve losing all my friends, including Julian, especially Julian, but in time they would see that it had been for the best, and they would surely forgive me. Taking a handful of loose change from the bedside table, I put on my dressing gown and dragged myself to the payphone in the corridor, dialing the number before I could change my mind. When Max answered, I pressed the A button, heard the coins tumble into the chamber and swallowed, racking my brain for the right words. "Hello?" he said, sounding as if he'd already had a drink or two, despite the early hour. "Maxwood Heat." In the background I could hear laughter, the sounds of girls' voices and of glasses clinking together. "Hello?" he repeated. "Who's there? Speak up, for Christ's sake, I haven't got all day." But I said nothing, hanging up and returning to my room, knowing that it was no good. 20 minutes later, I was making my way towards the church in Renler, growling at anyone who happened to smile in my direction, and the lads who shouted from their cars that I was beginning a life sentence. Feeling ill again, I paused and, realizing that I still had a good half hour to spare, took a detour into a tea shop at the corner of Charlemont. It was busy, but there was an empty table in the corner, and I sat there, by the window, ordering a large, strong cup of coffee and 2 glasses of water, both filled with ice, and began to relax a little as I sipped them, watching the students making their way into town, the businessmen heading for their offices, the housewives wheeling shopping bags towards Quinsworth, and wondered whether there had ever been a moment when my life might have taken a different turn. How had Jasper Timpson, a fucking piano accordion player for Christ's sake, ended up living with his boyfriend in Toronto while I was preparing to marry a woman in whom I had no sexual interest whatsoever?
When was the exact moment that I might have found some courage and for once in my life done the right thing? Right now, I told myself. This is it. This is the moment. There's still time. Give me a sign, I muttered to the universe. Just something to give me the courage to walk away. I jumped as a hand touched my shoulder and looked around to see a woman and a small child standing next to me, glancing towards the empty seats at my table. You don't mind, do you? She asked. Only there isn't anywhere else. Be my guest, I said, although I would have preferred to have been left alone. The child, a boy of about 8 or 9, sat down opposite me, and I glared at him as he took in my wedding suit and seemed amused by it. He was very neatly dressed, wearing a white shirt beneath a blue tank top, and his hair was carefully combed with an immaculate side parting. He looked like he could have been the kid brother of the young Nazi who sang Tomorrow Belongs to Me in Cabaret, the last film that Alice and I had gone to together. The boy was carrying 4 books in his hands, and he laid them out on the table before him, apparently deciding which one merited his attentions the most. "Can I ask you a favor?" asked the woman. "You wouldn't look after Jonathan for me for a few minutes, would you? I just need to use the facilities. Then I have a phone call to make, and then I'll be ordering some tea." "Are you getting married today? You're dressed for it." "In about an hour," I said, certain that I recognized her from somewhere, but unable just at that moment to place her. "And who's Jonathan?"
"Naturally, I'm Jonathan," said the little boy,
extending his hand to me.
"Jonathan Edward Goggin. And who might you be?"
"Cyril Avery," I said, staring at the small hand that gave off a slight odor of soap before giving in and shaking it. "It's fine," I said to his mother. "I won't let anyone kidnap him. I know the signs for that." It was obvious that she didn't understand what I meant by that, but she turned away regardless and made her way towards the doors at the other corner of the room, while I looked back at the boy and he concentrated on his books.
"What are you reading?"
I asked him eventually.
"Well,"
he declared with an enormous sigh, as if the weight of the world was upon his shoulders, but he was trying to remain stoical about it.
"I haven't quite decided yet. I was at the library this morning, you see. It's my regular day. And Mrs. Shipley, the librarian, recommended these 3 here. And she's usually an excellent advocate of good storytelling, so I took her advice. This one seems to be about a rabbit who takes a baby fox as a companion. But I can't see how that could work, because no matter how much kindness the rabbit shows the fox, eventually it will just grow up and eat him. This one here is about a group of children, distantly related, I suspect. They usually are, who solve crimes on their summer holidays, but I flipped through it on the way here, and I found the word nigger in there, and there's a black boy in my class at school, and he says that word is a very bad word, and he's an extremely good friend of mine, probably my 3rd best friend, so I might avoid it just to be on the safe side. And this one is some nonsense about the 1916 rising, and the thing is, I'm just not political. I never have been. So I might just go with this one here, which was the one I chose myself."
He held up the book, and I glanced at the cover. An image of a boy standing tall, legs parted, holding a cockerel under one arm and a mysterious box under the other, while what looked like refugees walked past in the background. The words, "The Silver Sword," were printed in the top right-hand corner.
"What's it about?"
I asked.
"Well, I don't really know," he said, "as I haven't started it yet. But the back cover says it's about the war and children fleeing the Nazis. Do you know about the Nazis? I know all about them. They were the worst, just awful, awful people without a shred of humanity between them. But here's the thing, Mr. Avery."
"Call me Cyril," I said.
"No, I couldn't do that. You're really old and I'm just a child. I'm 28,
I said, appalled and insulted.
"Wow," he said, laughing. "That is so ancient. You're like a dinosaur. Anyway, here's the thing. As I was saying before you so rudely interrupted me, I prefer stories about things that really happened. And the war really happened, didn't it? So I want to know about it. Did you fight in the war, Mr. Avery?"
"No," I said, on account of the fact that I was born a few months after it ended.
"I find that very hard to believe," said Jonathan, shaking his head. "You look so old that if you said you'd fought in the First World War, I wouldn't have fallen off my seat in surprise."
And with that he burst out laughing, and continued to laugh for so long and so hard that I had no choice but to laugh along.
"Shut up, you little prick," I said eventually, even though I was still laughing, and he switched to giggling now. "I have a hangover, that's all."
"You said a bad word," he told me.
"I did," I admitted. "I learned it in the trenches at Verdun."
"Verdun was a battle in the First World War," he announced. "It lasted 11 months, and General von Hindenburg, who later became President of Germany, was in charge. I knew you were old. And what's a hangover?"
"It's when you pour so much drink down your throat that you wake up the next day feeling like the wreck of the Hesperus."
I glanced around in search of his mother, but there was no sign of her as yet. "So are you looking forward to getting married?" asked Jonathan. "Don't people usually do that when they're much younger? Could you not find someone to marry you until now?"
"I'm a late developer," I said.
"What's that mean?"
"Give it a few years. Something tells me you'll understand in time."
"And you're marrying a woman?"
"No, I'm marrying a train. The 1104 from Castlebar." He frowned.
"How can you marry a train?" he asked.
"There's nothing in the Constitution that says I can't."
"I suppose not. And if you love the train and the train loves you, then I suppose you should marry it."
"I'm not marrying a train, Jonathan," I said with a sigh, taking a long drink from my iced water. "I'm marrying a woman."
"I knew it. You're silly."
"I am silly," I admitted. "I'm about the silliest man you've ever met. I'm a complete fucking idiot, actually."
"You said another bad word." "I bet you're going to have sex with your wife tonight, aren't you?"
"How do you know about sex?" I asked. "You're only about 6.
"I'm 8, and I'll be 9 in 3 weeks' time. And I know all about sex, actually," he added,
not seeming the least embarrassed.
"My mother told me all about it."
"Let me guess," I said. "When a mummy and a daddy love each other very much, they lie close together and the Holy Spirit descends upon them to create the miracle of new life."
"Don't be ridiculous," said Jonathan. "That's not what happens at all."
At which point he proceeded to give me a very frank description of how a man and a woman went about the business of fornicating, even telling me a few things that I had not known before. "How on earth do you know all these things?" I asked him when he'd finished his rather graphic and stomach-churning lecture.
"My mother says that one of the problems in this country is that no one is willing to talk about sex because of the influence of the Catholic Church. And she says that she wants me to grow up understanding that a woman's body is something to be cherished, not something to be afraid of."
"I wish she'd been my mother," I muttered.
"When I'm grown up, I intend to be a very considerate lover," said Jonathan, nodding his head fiercely.
"Good for you. And what does your father say about all this?"
"Oh, I don't have a father," he said.
"Of course you have a father. You don't know anything about sex if you don't understand that everyone has a mother and a father."
"I mean, I don't know my father," said Jonathan. "I'm illegitimate."
"I hate that word."
"I do too. But I wear it as a badge of honour. I find that if I say it to people, then they don't say it behind my back. They can't gossip in corners saying, 'Do you know that Jonathan Edward Goggin is illegitimate?' Because I'll already have told them. 1-0 to me. In fact, every time I meet someone new, I make sure to tell them quite soon."
"Doesn't your mother mind?"
"She'd prefer that I didn't. But she says that I have to do whatever feels right, and that she's not going to make any decisions for me. She says she's my mother, not my grandfather."
"What on earth does that mean?"
"I haven't the foggiest," said Jonathan. "But she says that she'll explain it to me someday."
"You're a bit of an oddball, Jonathan," I said. "Has anyone ever told you that?"
19 people this year alone," he said. "And it's only May."
I laughed and checked my watch. 5 more minutes and I would have to go.
"What's the name of the girl you're marrying?" asked Jonathan.
"Alice," I said.
"There's a girl named Alice in my class," he replied, opening his eyes wide, apparently excited that we should have this in common. "She's really, really, really pretty. She has long blonde hair and eyes the colour of opals."
"Is she your girlfriend?" I asked.
"No!"
he screamed, making the other people in the cafe turn around and stare in our direction. He went bright red then.
"No, she's not my girlfriend at all."
"Sorry," I said, laughing. "I forgot you're only 8.
"A girl named Melanie is my girlfriend," he said.
"Oh, right. Fair enough."
"And I'm going to marry her one day."
"Really? Good for you."
"Thank you." Isn't it funny that you're getting married this morning, and I'm telling you about the girl I'm going to marry when I'm all grown up?
That's hilarious, I said. All you need is love. It's all any of us need.
The Beatles, said Jonathan quickly. All you need is love. A Lennon-McCartney composition, although it's actually written by John Lennon. Magical Mystery Tour, 1967, B-side, Song 5.
You're a Beatles fan, then? I asked.
Of course. Aren't you?
Of course.
Who's your favourite Beatle?
George, I said.
Interesting.
Who's yours?
Pete Best.
Interesting.
I always root for the underdog, said Jonathan.
We sat and stared at each other, and, all things considered, I felt a little disappointed when his mother returned.
I'm so sorry, she said, looking a little flustered. My phone call took longer than I expected. I'm trying to arrange a flight to Amsterdam, and Aer Lingus don't make it easy. I have to go into their offices tomorrow, and that will take up half my day.
It's fine, I said, standing up.
But I better go now.
He's marrying a girl called Alice, said Jonathan.
Is he indeed? She said. Lucky Alice.
She paused then and stared at me.
We know each other, don't we? She asked.
You look terribly familiar.
I think we do, I said.
Didn't you used to work in the tea room at Dáil Éireann?
Yes, I still do, actually.
I used to be a civil servant. Our paths occasionally crossed there. I once got punched in the face by the Taoiseach's press officer, and you took care of me afterwards.
She thought about this and shook her head.
I have a vague memory of that, she said. But then again, punch-ups happen there all the time.
Are you sure it was me?
Definite, I said, but pleased that she didn't recall it, as of course I had confided in her that day about my sexuality.
You were very kind to me.
All right. It's just that you remind me of someone I once knew, a long time ago.
I shrugged and turned to Jonathan, offering him a half-bow as I prepared to leave.
It's been a pleasure, young man, I said.
Good luck with your forthcoming wedding to your fiancée, Alice, he said.
He's an interesting boy, I said to his mother as I stepped past her. You're going to have your hands full with him.
I know, she said, smiling. But he's my darling, and I'm not letting this one go.
Oh.
What?
I asked.
For she had shivered suddenly.
Are you all right?
Yes,
she said. I just had one of those strange sensations, as if someone walked over my grave.
I smiled, said my goodbyes, and made my way towards the door.
Fuck you, I said to the universe. All I asked for was a sign, something to give me the courage to walk away, and you couldn't even do that.
I had no choice. It was time to get married.
Loving someone else.
I entered the sacristy by the side door to find Julian seated at a table, looking over the order of service for the ceremony. For someone who must have had just as few hours of sleep as me, he seemed remarkably fresh-faced, having rid himself of the stubble that he'd been favouring lately and got a haircut. It was a surprise to see him wearing his reading glasses. He almost never wore them around people. But he took them off as soon as he saw me and placed them in his top pocket. It probably goes without saying that his new suit fitted him like a second skin.
"There you are," he said, grinning up at me. "The condemned man. How's the head?"
"Terrible," I told him. "How's yours?"
"Not too bad, all things considered. I got a couple of hours sleep, then went for a swim in the Countess Markovitch pool before visiting my barber. He put hot towels over my face and hummed Simon and Garfunkel songs while he shaved me. The whole thing was incredibly relaxing."
"You did all that in the last 9 hours?" I asked, baffled.
"Yes." "Why not?"
I shook my head.
"How could someone drink as much as him, be out as late as him, and then get up, do all that, and still look so attractive? Were some people just given everything?"
"I feel like I'm going to be sick," I said. "I might be better off going back to bed." His smile faded, and he threw me an anxious look before bursting out laughing.
"Jesus," he said. "Don't do that to me, Cyril. I thought you were serious for a moment."
"What makes you think I'm not?" I muttered.
"Anyway, I'm here, haven't I?" You realize I'd have no choice but to kill you if you let my sister down, right? You were in some form last night all the same. I suppose the nerves were getting to you. Your friend Nick was pretty upset by the way you spoke to him.
He's not my friend, I said.
And how do you know how he feels? Oh, I ran into him earlier. Just by chance on Grafton Street, we went for a quick coffee.
I sat down and closed my eyes. Of course he had.
And of course they had.
I could have predicted it.
What's the matter? He asked, coming over and taking the seat next to me. Do you need an aspirin?
I've had four already.
How about some water?
Yes, please.
He went over to the sink, and when he couldn't find a glass, reached for a large golden chalice with silver inlay along the knob, filled it to the brim and covered it with a bronze pattern before handing it to me.
Bless you, my son, he said.
Thanks, Julian, I said. Are you sure you're going to be okay?
I'll be fine, I told him, trying to look cheerful.
Happiest day of my life.
It's hard to believe that we're going to be brothers-in-law in an hour or so, isn't it? After all these years of friendship, I mean.
I don't know if I ever said it, Cyril, but I was really happy when you asked me to be your best man.
And when you asked Alice to marry you.
Who else will I ask? I said.
Well, there's a lot of girls out there.
I meant, who else would I ask but you? I said. You're my best friend, after all.
And you're mine.
She looked so happy when I was leaving the house this morning.
Who did?
Well, Alice, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Is she here yet, anyway? No, the priest said he'll give us the nod when she and Max arrive. I saw your father out there, though, and the new Mrs. Avery. She's a bit of a stunner, isn't she?
My adoptive father, I said.
And, yes, she's a model, as it happens.
Get out of town!
I rolled my eyes.
Why?
I asked. Were you thinking of having a crack at her yourself later?
It crossed my mind, but no. Models are hard work, and they're all fucking crazy. I tried it on with Twiggy once, and she was having none of it.
I guess that means she's crazy, I said.
I didn't mean it like that. But she looked at me like it was something she trod in. Even Princess Margaret wasn't that rude. Fair play to Charles, all the same. He still manages to pull them, doesn't he? I hope I'm still having as much luck as he is when I'm that age.
I felt the water reacting badly inside my stomach, and beads of perspiration beginning to break out across my forehead. What was I even doing here? Years of regret and shame began to overwhelm me. A lifetime of lying, of feeling that I was being forced to lie, had led me to a moment where I was not only preparing to destroy my own life, but also that of a girl who had done nothing whatsoever to deserve it. Sensing my despair, Julian came over and placed an arm around me, and it felt entirely natural when I allowed my head to rest on his shoulder. I wanted nothing more than to close my eyes and fall asleep while he held me. The scent of his cologne was subtle, and beneath it I could smell the lingering odour of whatever cream the barber had used earlier.
"What's the matter, Cyril?"
he asked me quietly.
"You don't seem like yourself at all." It's natural to be nervous on your wedding day, but you do know how much Alice loves you, right?
I do, I said. And you love her too, don't you?
His tone hardened a little when I didn't reply immediately. You love my sister, don't you, Cyril?
I inclined my head a little to give the appearance of an affirmative answer.
I wish my mother was here, that's all,
I said, the sentiment surprising me, for I had not realized that I wished any such thing.
Maud?
No.
My real mother.
The woman who gave birth to me.
Oh, right, he said.
Have you been in touch with her, then?
You never said.
No, I replied. I just wish she was here, that's all. To help me. To talk to me.
When she made the decision to walk away from me, it must have been incredibly difficult.
I just wonder how badly it affected her afterwards, that's all. I'd like to ask her.
Well, I'm here, said Julian. So if there's anything you need to talk about, that's what a best man is for. Not to mention a best friend.
I looked up at him and quite unexpectedly began to cry.
Jesus Christ, Cyril,
said Julian, sounding truly worried.
You're starting to scare me now. What's the matter with you anyway?
Come on, you can tell me anything, you know that. Is it just a drink? Do you need to be sick?
It's not the drink, I said, shaking my head. But I can't tell you.
Of course you can.
Think of all the things I've told you over the years. Christ, if we were to write some of that down, I wouldn't come out of it smelling like roses, would I? You haven't been with another girl, have you? Behind Alice's back. It's not something like that, is it?
No, I said. No, there's been no other girl.
Because if you had, well, I suppose you could just chalk it up to experience. Alice is no saint either, you know. A marriage only begins when you take your vows. After that, you have to stay faithful, I suppose, or what's the point? But if you've had a few slips along the way...
It's not that, I insisted, raising my voice. Then what?
What is it, Cyril? Just tell me, for Christ's sake! I'm not in love with her, I said, looking down at the ground, noticing for the first time that Julian's shoes were a little scuffed at the sides. He'd forgotten to polish them. Maybe he wasn't perfect after all.
What did you just say?
He asked me. I said I'm not in love with her, I repeated quietly. I'm very fond of her. She's the kindest, most thoughtful, most decent girl I've ever known in my life. The truth is she deserves better than me.
You're not going to get all self-loathing on me, are you?
But I don't love her, I repeated.
Of course you fucking love her, he said, taking his arm from my shoulder now.
No, I said, feeling intense excitement to hear the words emerging from my mouth. I know what love is, because I feel it for someone else, just not for her. It was as if I had left my body and was floating in non-corporeal form a few feet above us, looking down, watching carefully, intrigued to know how this scene was going to play out. And still delusional enough to wonder if there was any chance of me going home with a different would-be than the one I was there to marry. Julian took a long time to speak again.
"But you just told me," he said slowly, sounding out every word carefully, "that there's been no other girl."
"The truth is, I've been in love for as long as I can remember," I said, keeping my voice as steady as possible. "Since I was a child, in fact. I know it sounds stupid to believe in something as corny as love at first sight, but it's what happened to me. I fell in love years ago, and I've never been able to let go of that person since."
"But who?" he asked,
the words almost a whisper as I turned my head towards him.
"Who is it? I don't understand."
Our eyes locked, and I knew then that my entire life had led me towards that moment, to that sacristy, to the two of us sitting next to each other, and, without planning it, I leaned forward to kiss him. For a few seconds, no more than 3 or 4, our lips pressed against each other, and I felt that curious mix of tenderness and masculinity that defined him. They parted just a touch, almost automatically, and so did mine. I moved my tongue forward. And then it was over.
"What the fuck?"
said Julian, leaping to his feet and stumbling back towards the wall, almost tripping over his own feet as he did so. He didn't sound so much angry as utterly bewildered. "I can't marry her, Julian," I said, looking across at him and feeling braver now than I ever had before. "I'm not in love with her."
"What are you talking about?
Is this a joke?"
"I'm not in love with her," I insisted. "I'm in love with you. I've been in love with you for as long as I can remember. Since that first moment I came downstairs in Dartmouth Square and saw you sitting in the hallway. All the way through our school days, and every day since."
He stared at me,
the pieces starting to fall into place. And he turned away, looking out the sacristy window to the gardens beyond. I said nothing, my heart pounding so hard within my chest that it felt as if I might be having a heart attack. And yet I didn't feel frightened. I felt instead as if a great burden had finally been lifted from my shoulders. I felt excited and free, because there was no way that he would allow me to marry his sister now, not knowing what he knew. Whatever happened next might be painful, but at least I would not be condemning myself to a lifetime with a woman for whom I felt no desire.
"You're a
queer, he said, turning back to me. His tone lost somewhere between a question and a statement. I suppose so, yes, I said, if you want to put it like that. Since when? Since always. I don't have any interest in women at all. That's the truth of it. I never have had. I've only ever, you know, done it with men. Well, except for once a few weeks ago with Alice. She wanted to. I didn't. But I thought it was worth trying. Are you telling me that you've had sex with men? He asked. And I was surprised to hear such disbelief in his voice. He who could scarcely get through 24 hours without fucking someone. Of course I have, I said. I'm not a total eunuch, you know. How many? 4? 5? Jesus, does it matter? I asked, recalling a similar conversation I had had with Alice and how I had been uncertain whether I wanted to know her number out of interest or perversity. Yes, it matters. Maybe it's just a phase and... Oh, come on, Julian, I said. I'm 28 years old. I'm past phases. How many, then? I don't know. 200, maybe? Probably more. 200! Which is probably a lot less than you've slept with. Jesus fucking Christ, he said, panicking now, making perfect circles on the carpet as he marched around. You can't be fucking serious. You've been lying to me for the last 20 years. I haven't been lying, I said, desperate for him to tell me that it was all right, that everything would be fine in the end, that he'd fix things, that Alice would understand and life could return to normal. Well, what else would you call it? I didn't know how to tell you. So you thought you'd wait until today? Until now, when you're about 10 minutes away from marrying my sister? Jesus Christ, he added, shaking his head. And I thought that fucker Fergus was bad. I'm nothing like Fergus, I said. Now he's a fucking saint compared to you. Julian, you can't hate me because I'm gay. That's not fair. It's 1973, for God's sake. You think I hate you because you're gay? He asked, looking at me as if he had never heard anything so stupid in his life. I don't give a fuck that you're gay. I never would have cared. Not for a moment. If you'd bothered to tell me. If you'd treated me like an actual friend instead of someone you were just lusting over. I hate you because you've lied to me all these years, Cyril, and worse still, you've lied to Alice. This is going to break her heart. Have you any idea what it was like for her after Fergus?
She'll understand, I said quietly.
She'll what?
You'll understand, I repeated. She's a very empathetic person. Julian laughed in disbelief.
Stand up, Cyril, he said.
What?
Stand up.
Why? Because I said so, and if you love me so much, then you must want to make me happy. And it would make me very happy if you stood up. I frowned, uncertain what was going to happen next, but I did as he asked and stood. There, I said. I'm standing. But not for long.
A moment later I was on the floor, sprawled on my back, a little dazed, and with a pain so sharp running through my jaw that I wondered whether he'd broken it. I put a hand to my face and could taste blood inside my cheek.
Julian, I said, looking up at him, close to tears.
I'm sorry.
I don't give a fuck if you're sorry, he said. Do you know something? I've never felt more contempt for anyone in my whole life than I do for you right now. I swear to God that if it wasn't for the fact that I have no intention of spending the rest of my life in jail, I would break your fucking neck right now. I swallowed, feeling pitiful inside. Everything was ruined.
When he retreated to one of the side walls, rubbing his chin with one hand as he thought all of this through, I stumbled to my feet and sat down again, nursing my jaw.
I should go, I said finally.
Go? He said, turning around and frowning. Go where?
Go home, I said with a shrug. There's no point in me staying here, is there? I've done enough damage.
You'll have to tell her, though, I added.
I can't do it. I can't face her.
Tell her? Tell who? Tell Alice?
Of course, I said.
You think I'm going to tell her?
She loves you, I reasoned. She'll want you with her today, not me.
I'm not telling her anything, said Julian, raising his voice again and advancing on me with such ferocity that I shrank back in the seat.
Let me tell you what's going to happen here today, you stupid fucking prick. And what's not going to happen? If you think that I'm going to allow my sister to be humiliated for the second time in front of all her family and friends, you're completely fucking delusional.
I stared at him, uncertain what he was getting at. So what do you want me to do? I asked him.
What you promised to do, he said. We're going to go out there together, you and I. We're going to stand side by side at the altar while Max walks my sister up the aisle. And we're both going to wear the biggest shit-eating smiles that anyone ever wore in their entire lives. And when the priest tells you to say, I do, you're going to say it as if your entire life depends on it. And afterwards, you and Alice are going to walk back down the aisle as husband and wife, and you, my friend, are going to be a good and faithful husband to her. And if I ever hear of you going off with some queer behind her back, I will come after you and personally cut your balls off with the rustiest penknife I can find. Do I make myself clear, Cyril?
I stared at him and swallowed hard. It was impossible to believe that he meant any of this.
I can't, I said, trying to hold back the tears. It's the rest of my life we're talking about.
And it's the rest of Alice's.
You're going to fucking marry her, Cyril. Do you understand me?
You're saying that you want your sister to marry me, knowing what you know?
Of course I don't want her to. And if she walked in here right now and said she didn't want to marry you, I'd lift her off the ground and carry her out on my shoulders. But she's come here to get married, and that's what's going to happen. She fucking loves you, Cyril. If you can believe she would love anyone so morally vacuous.
Well, what about us?
I asked, his words hitting me like arrows.
Us? What about us? What are you talking about?
You and I, will we still be friends? He stared at me and started laughing.
You're unbelievable, he said. You're absolutely un-be-fucking-leavable. We're not friends, Cyril. We never have been friends. I never even knew you, that's the truth of it. The person I thought of as Cyril Avery never even existed. So no, we won't be friends ever again. When we see each other at family functions, I'll be polite to you so no one finds out the truth. But don't ever think that I feel anything towards you other than total and utter loathing. And if you dropped dead on your honeymoon, I'd cry no tears over you.
Don't say that, Julian, I said, starting to weep again. Please, you can't mean it. I love you.
He ran at me then, lifting me off the chair and pinning me up against the wall, one hand holding me there by the collar while the other pulled back, clenched into a fist. It was trembling in rage. Had he hit me right at that moment, I know that he would have killed me.
If you ever say that to me again, he hissed. If you ever say anything like that to me again, I swear to God, they will be the last words you ever speak. Do you understand me?
I let my body go slack and nodded as he stepped away from me.
What the fuck is wrong with you people?
He asked me.
Why do you have to lie about everything? Hide everything. Why not just tell the truth? What the fuck is wrong with simply being honest with people from the start?
I laughed bitterly and looked away. Don't even try going down that road, Julian, I said, ready to fight back now if I had to.
You don't have a clue what you're talking about. But then people like you never do.
There was a tap on the door and we both turned as the priest glanced inside, a cheerful smile on his face.
Your bride awaits you, young man,
he said, his grin fading only a little as he saw my slightly disheveled state. I looked at Julian, pleading with him to set me free, but he looked away and walked towards the door.
Make sure you comb your hair before you come out here, he said. The last words he would speak to me for many years. Remember where you are and what you've come here to do. Crazy naked man.
3 hours later, a respectable married man at last, I found myself standing in the Horseshoe Bar of the Shelburne Hotel, making small talk with the President of Ireland, Eamon de Valera.